Senator Rob Kupak joins us from the state capitol today. He has a number of visitors from Fargo, Moorhead, West Fargo Chamber of Commerce, and obviously talking Minnesota policy. You like it when folks come down from the chamber?
Absolutely. It's always nice to get people from district. Obviously, I'm like the third furthest senator away from the capitol, so it's nice to get people from home to come down and pay a visit.
And do different groups come down regularly? You get a lot of people through here?
It is. We get a lot regularly, not as much as obviously the people who live closer, because it's a time commitment to come down. But particularly this session, I think we've had more than previous years of people from back home who've made the trip down to St. Paul.
Remind me how long you've done this.
So this is, I'm in my first term. This is the third year of a 4-year term.
How are you enjoying it so far?
I am really enjoying it. It's been good. I feel like particularly this session, I've kind of gotten a little bit more of my feet under me and, particularly moving some of the legislation through. I feel like I'm a better navigator than I was probably 2 years ago.
Let's talk about a couple issues that you'll be hearing about from the chamber folks. And a little bit of background here, if you would, on the flood mitigation component, Minnesota's commitment. There's sort of a framework of what the commitment will be, what needs to be done in this session to keep that track moving down the train.
Sure.
Train moving down the track, I should say.
Sure. So a lot of that is in, capital investment or bonding. And we have fewer dollars to work with this year in bonding compared to years past. So the bonding bill may be a little slim. I have expressed, to the bonding chair, I think she is well aware of what specifically our needs are, and about the FM diversion, that legally the FM diversion can't run in 2027 until the Moorhead component of that is finished up. So I think she's looking under every rock and cushion she can to find a few extra dollars to help on that bonding request.
And it's as you say, it sounds like it's not optional, right? I mean, the whole project shuts down but for the funding from Minnesota.
Right. I mean, in my mind, I'm like, it's kind of legalese. I can't imagine that, like, if in 2027 we were staring down a huge flood, that they wouldn't go, all right, let's turn it on. But legally, under the legal rules, that Moorhead component has to be finished. And because part of that was with deals with landowners to the south, that we said we would take more water through that main channel to help some of those landowners to the south. And so part of that is some different controls we have to put in along the river in Moorhead.
And so what is your request from the bonding side, and does that continue in future years?
Sure, it will. It will always. Bonding is kind of like one of those hurry up and get in line, and then we'll kind of dole it out. As you know, the problem is every time we kind of partially fund one of these programs, it doesn't get completely finished, and then the price goes up because of inflation. So the total ask for the county is, for Clay County, is about $57 million. Then the Moorhead component of that is about $16 million. And that's up a couple of million from 2 years ago when it was about $14 million. So all of these things keep getting more expensive. And, we've put so much into it, and then we'll just need this last little bit to kind of put it over the edge. So
okay, so beyond that funding you just described, then that commitment's done.
Well, the Moorhead part is done. The county obviously has other things too. Some of it is, for more of those more rural areas. I think the $16 million is the biggest impact. It's not only, I should say, the legal part. There's an economic component part to the everyday person, because if you, right now, you have to get flood insurance if you have that mortgage. And if we finish this up, then you won't have to pay flood insurance if you have a mortgage. So that's also a kind of everybody in their wallet pocketbook situation.
And, I know there's obviously fierce competition for limited dollars when it comes to bonding, and everybody's project is a priority. But Minnesota's done a pretty good job of making flood mitigation a priority, haven't they?
They have. In the northwest part of the state, because of what happened in 97 and then in 2009, we have put a lot of money in there. But we're also now starting to see, we're kind of going to be starting competing with other parts of the state. When you look at what happened in Mankato last year with the dam failure, there are other parts of the state. Duluth's had some flooding too. They're going to need some money. The one nice thing is, in one way, the northwest part of the state is kind of a way to look for as a model. We've been really good about, not only because it's Minnesota, North Dakota, Manitoba, but also our local contingencies working together to do that. And I think some of the rest of the state could kind of learn by us how to get things done.
We're all watching closely the announcement not long ago that a sustainable aviation fuel project was planned for just outside of Moorhead. Give us an update on that project.
Sure. You know, everything seems to be on track. So that's DG Fuels. One thing we did 2 years ago that kind of attracted them was we put a tax credit in for sustainable aviation fuel. And a lot of other states, we were kind of leading the nation in that. A lot of other states, places like Iowa and Nebraska said, oh, hey, we should do that too. And so now what we have this year is an extension. So we'll extend that tax credit further out to make sure that Minnesota looks to be the most attractive place to do this. And the other thing we have going for us is the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. None of those other states that are looking at this, they do not have that big airport hub that we have here in Minnesota.
My understanding, one of their challenges is just to get the feedstock. I mean, what do they make the SAF from, and can they get enough of it?
There are so many things that they can make the SAF from. So, I mean, whether it's left, some of it is feedstock, some of it is, you know, byproducts that are left over from agriculture. Our timber industry is super excited about this because you can use the scraps from timber industry. You know, they want the middle of the pole, but the branches, the wood chips, all of that is really can go into sustainable aviation fuel as well. So there's, it kind of touches all parts of the Minnesota economy that we can be a leader in this.
Does the financing rely on any federal tax credits that could threaten the project that might change?
There are. I believe the plant has some federal tax credits. Our tax credit does not rely on the federal government. So as far as I know right now, I mean, Delta is a big proponent of this. Other airlines are too. I think the federal part of that seems like it's still in place. I think there's enough big players in it that I'm optimistic that that'll stay.
Let's talk about another project that is on the drawing board, a psychiatric regional treatment facility, plan two for Moorhead. I know we hear from law enforcement all the time about the challenges they have in interacting with individuals that are lawbreakers, but they're also dealing with mental health crisis. And you always hear there's just not enough beds. What's the status of that project? If it happens, what will it mean for additional resources for law enforcement?
Sure. It's got a lot of moving parts to it. So originally, Clay County came, and a lot of credit. Our Clay County commissioners have done such a good job of getting so many supporters of this in the whole northwest part of the state, even down into the Twin Cities on board with this. But the original idea of a brand new standalone psychiatric facility, I think we decided was cost prohibitive. So they went back to the drawing board, kind of looked, and they said, you know, we have this non-secure facility that we could convert into a juvenile psychiatric center. So that part seems to be moving ahead. The catch is that because of that, we also then need a new non-secure facility, which costs less than the psychiatric facility, but still has a cost to it. And that is also a bonding ask. So that one might be the sticky point. I think we can get the money for the psychiatric treatment facility. Department of Human Services, Health and Human Services seems really on board with it. The problem is we got that money. We still need to figure out where we're going to put the non-secure facility, and that's a bonding request. And because it's a brand new bonding request, there's a lot of people like, hey, we've stood in line for a long time. Why are they jumping the line? So I think that's going to be part of it. But they have rallied so much support. I think we have 27 counties, all the tribal nations, down here in Hennepin County, they realize that, you know, they're sending 7 or 8 kids every week up to Moorhead to the non-secure facility. So they know that that's a need, and we're helping the whole part of this, the whole state, really.
If you get that across the finish line, what do you see in the way of impacts?
I mean, in terms of impacts, it's huge. For one thing, for some of the psychiatrics, we're shipping kids out of state. We're shipping them as far as Arkansas to go get treatment. And that, you know, you want to be close to your family. To be separated from your family, that does not help you in your journey to get that psychiatric treatment. So that's the immediate step right there. And the fact that particularly up in the Northwest, there are no facilities in the Northwest part of the state. So even if we have an in-state facility, that's time and money that law enforcement is transporting people to someplace maybe down here in the cities.
One issue that I believe you differed with the chamber on was the family leave issue. There's been some discussion of delaying the implementation of that. Are you on board with that?
I think that the everybody that I've talked to about paid family medical leave would prefer that we go ahead with it. I think my concern is how is Deed ready to roll this out? And from all the conversations I've heard with them, they sound like they are. So I don't really see a need to delay it a year. If they're ready to get going and hit the ground running, then I think we should go ahead.
Talk a little bit about that decision. And that was a tough one for you from what you voiced, correct?
Yes and no. I mean, when we were running, I talked about paid family medical leave. I thought it was a good thing. There are There are a lot of benefits that go along with paid family medical leave that I don't think always get discussed about in terms of, we talk a lot sometimes about the child care aspect of it. You know, when you have a child, if you can be out those few weeks, I think that's so beneficial. And lots of studies have shown that in the long term, all those kids are healthier. And it also gives, you know, some of this will tie back in. It's a strange way to tie back into the abortion issue. But we know that the number one reason that people decide that they do not want to continue with a pregnancy is economic reasons. And most of these people already have two kids on average. And if we give them a way to say, you know what, we think there's a way that we can help you economically, that they may make a different decision in their life.
Interesting. I hadn't heard that argument before of tying it to less abortions, which hopefully everybody can agree would be a good thing. How about the business impact? What have you heard from the business community about their concerns about the size of the project, the impact on their businesses?
Sure. You know, the ones the ones that we hear the most from are the smaller ones, because this is, if somebody goes out, you know, where am I going to find a replacement worker for this person? And so I think we've taken that into account. And, you know, the one thing is, a lot of these people, you're going out on this anyway. I mean, there are guardrails put up around paid family medical leave. This isn't like, I don't feel good on a Friday, I'm taking a day off. You have to document why you're going out. And so even in a small business, right, people get pregnant, car accidents happen, people get cancer, all of those things happen that are going to have these people go out. And what happens now, because it's an insurance policy. So that means that business now, that burden of actually having to pay that employee comes off. Yes, you may still need to find a temporary employee to replace them. And the state has put in some, you know, grant money to allow some of these small businesses to help them. Maybe it's not either to help them find something or give out a little more money to some of their other employees who are maybe having to pick up the slack that somebody's not there.
Talk about the politics of this place right now. It seems like it's a very stressful, tenuous, obviously there's slim majorities in the Senate. There's now a flip to the Republican side. They're waiting at maybe even. Is it as partisan as it seems from afar?
I would say, you know, I will only speak for the Senate. I don't know I'm not sure what the atmosphere is in the House. I think my hunch is it's a little tenser. I mean, we started the Senate off with a tie as well because we had a senator pass away. And we came to an agreement, and we took the agreement as shared responsibility. And even though now the Democrats have come back into the majority in the Senate, I think that idea of working with shared responsibility has carried over. I've presented three bills this year, co-presented with Republicans, which is just a thing you just didn't even see. Two senators coming up to present a bill, let alone two senators of a different party coming up to co-present on things. So I think that idea, at least on the Senate side, of shared responsibility has carried over even now that the Democrats are back in the majority.
Last question. Do you have any time to watch the weather? I understand a blizzard is coming.
I do have time, and only I make time because I know that every day I am going to be asked by one of my colleagues, can I drive home? Can I do this? I know one of my colleagues in Health and Human Services, he has a couple of businesses, and he's like, am I going to have to go? He does the snow clearing himself. Do I have to go and plow tonight? And I'm like, yes, tonight you are going to have to go out and plow.
The secret's out. They know you're a meteorologist.
They do. And I try to be a bipartisan giver of information as much as I can.
Sounds good. Thanks for the time.
Sure. Thanks a lot.